This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And now to Staples Center, where Kobe Bryant is playing one last time. A deep purple hue that spanned the 20,000 or so people inside illuminated the silhouette of a music superstar named Beyoncé, who knew exactly what to sing.
I'm here because I love Kobe, and this was one of his favorite songs. So I want to start that over, but I want us to do it all together. And I want you to sing it so loud they hear your love. Are y'all ready? Love you. Your love is bright as ever. Even in the shadows.
So beautiful. It's been nearly a month since the Laker great and his daughter Gianna and seven other people died in a helicopter crash. Now, for her part, Kobe's wife, Vanessa, took to the stage to first talk about their 13-year-old daughter, the one that she lost.
Gigi was sunshine. She brightened up my day every day.
The heartbreak, she said, was only compounded by all the things that she won't be able to do for her.
I won't be able to tell her how gorgeous she looks on her wedding day. I'll never get to see my baby girl walk down the aisle, have a father-daughter dance with her daddy, dance on the dance floor with me, or have babies of her own. Gianna would have been an amazing mommy. She was very maternal ever since she was really little. Gigi would have most likely become the best player in the WNBA. She would have made a huge difference. She would have made a huge difference for women's basketball.
ABC late night host Jimmy Kimmel hosted the ceremony at Staples, stating the obvious while holding back his own tears.
This is a sad day, but it is also a celebration of life, of their lives, and of life itself in the building where those of us who are Lakers fans and Kobe fans celebrated so many of the best times of our lives.
The family picked today for the memorial, the date being 224, because of Gianna's jersey number 2 and Bryant's jersey number 24. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb is with us from Staples, where he's been watching the memorial today and where it is wrapping up as we speak. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
Tell us what it was like inside Staples Center today.
Well, I got to tell you, Steve, I have been to Staples Center a number of times for basketball games, for concerts. I have never heard it this quiet. One by one, as the speakers came up, we had Michael Jordan, we had Shaq, we had Rob Pelinka, the agent, and also the GM of the Lakers. People were just listening intently. It was a very somber mood. You did have moments of the crowd bursting out into chants about Kobe Bryant. But all in all, a very somber, very beautiful, very tasteful celebration of not just Kobe Bryant, but of course, his daughter Gianna as well.
I know, Benjamin, organizers did not want people hanging out outside of Staples or at LA Live. They specifically didn't show the ceremony on any of the big screens outside for that reason. Did people abide by that, or are there still a lot of folks milling about outside?
Well, there definitely are folks milling about outside, just taking it all in, trying to get a taste. Because remember, only 20,000 tickets were sold to this event, with all the proceeds going to Kobe Bryant and his daughter's charity, Mamba and Mambacita. But I will say this, the security was very, very tight. You had 4 or 5 checkpoints to get in. I myself was running around trying to get myself in today. So all in all, they did have things really tightened down. But there, of course, still is such a presence outside Staples Center because, well, frankly, Kobe Bryant was beloved by most, if not all, of the city.
And you talked to a lot of folks outside, right?
I sure did. I met with a woman named DeAndra Perry. She was waiting in line, a long line that snaked around Figueroa, down Olympic Boulevard, waiting to get inside. And here's what she told me about why she decided to come and pay tribute to Kobe Bryant today.
That horrible day, man, it felt like I lost somebody in my own family, you know? And I think somebody like Kobe Bryant, you just expected him to be immortal. And, like, I think we all were saying, like, you're just right. We were expecting him to come out of it alive somehow, just rise from the ashes. And just goes to show, like, how precious life is. And I think Kobe brought together a whole city, so now we're bringing everybody else together and bringing them all here for him, so...
And that's what I heard a lot of, Steve, as I was talking to folks who did attend the memorial today. Kobe Bryant, for many, they had never met him before, but yet he felt like part of their family, part of the fabric of Los Angeles. He was, in many ways, Los Angeles. And I heard similar things from Cesar Vallon. He was with his brother and some friends as they were also waiting to get into the memorial today.
Like, he was L.A., you know? Like, I grew up watching him, and... My brothers and I, we grew up cheering for him, all the championships, the down years, everything. He's just always been there. And now, even when he stepped away from the game, we saw him, you know, saw everything with his family and everything. It was great. And just to know that he's gone, it's still unbelievable.
KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb over at Staples Center right now. Benjamin, the ceremony also focused a lot on Gianna, his daughter, 13 years old, focused on women's basketball and sports overall. Talk about some of the highlights there. There were some women's sports stars there.
There absolutely were. Diana Taurasi, a big-time name in the WNBA, also the coach of UConn basketball, was here as well. So we had a lot of emphasis on Gianna. This was not just about Kobe, but Gianna and also the seven others who died in that helicopter crash back in January. But again, really, lots of focus paid to women's sports, empowering women, and also celebrating Kobe Bryant, the dad. Remember, Kobe, he retired a few years ago, and he really made an effort to kind of turn the page on his life, take that next step, the next chapter, and his job, his focus, his attention on being a father really celebrated today at the stadium. And that really resonated with someone I met, Jason Angel, who also is the father of three daughters, and he also coaches his daughter's basketball. Here's what he told me.
His second act is even resonates with me even more because I'm a father of three. I have a girl who plays basketball. So when he started taking on that aspect in his life, oh, man, it hits a whole different level. But ties to competitiveness. He was competitive to be one of the greats of all time, and he also wanted to be one of the greatest fathers of all time. So that hits really close home for me.
Also hitting home, Steve, to a lot of people today, lots of symbolism all over the stadium, right? So the day of today's event, important, 224, the number of Gianna and also Kobe Bryant, his second number. You also had the exact number of roses all around the stage where the performances took place, equal to the amount of points that he scored in the NBA, 33,643 roses. So lots of symbolism today, and also lots of attention paid to Gianna.
A lot of emphasis on the family, Benjamin. I appreciate you being down there with that update for us. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb from Staples Center. Benjamin, thanks.
Anytime, Steve.
Well, coming up, where LA's most dangerous intersections are. You may be surprised. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You might be afraid of flying or of earthquakes or the coronavirus, but we all know that one of the most dangerous things that you can do is just get in your car every day. So it is important to acknowledge that there are some parts of town that are more dangerous than others when it comes to traffic accidents. And there's a new article in Crosstown that's identified the single most dangerous intersection in all of the city of Los Angeles. Ethan Ward wrote the story, and he joins me now to talk about it. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, what's up, Steve?
Before we get to which intersection this is, talk about Crosstown. Like, what do you guys do over there?
Okay, so at Crosstown, we basically analyze data about Los Angeles. Obviously, one of the big problems in LA is traffic safety. So we looked at a year's worth of collision data from the LAPD to figure out where cars are colliding the most frequently.
All right. And where, drum roll, please. Where is that intersection?
It's Sepulveda Boulevard and Sherman Way.
Okay. So this is in the San Fernando Valley.
Yes. In Van Nuys.
In Van Nuys. Well, by the way, we sent our reporter, KCRW's Jerome Campbell, to this intersection to speak with some people there about their experiences at Sherman Way in Sepulveda. Let's give a listen.
Even driving, if you pull out on Orion right there on Sherman Way, if there was a light there, it would even help as far as driving. So it doesn't matter whether you're driving or whether you're walking. It's still, it's dangerous. There needs to be a light there. That's just my personal opinion.
It is quite dangerous. You hear about it a lot of times. Cars don't stop for some of these people crossing the street. They have a hard time with that. And you do hear a lot of ambulance, and I will be sitting here at the bus stop and will witness quite a few accidents too at the same, not accidents, but accidents about to happen.
It's pretty heavy because of the 405 freeway. So the two lanes that turn to the left, it's crazy. Yeah.
That was Quentin Cornett, Cameron Duncan, and Cecilia Frejo, all at the now infamous intersection in Van Nuys. So, Ethan Ward with Crosstown, describe this intersection that we're talking about.
So this intersection, it's kind of surprising that it was the most dangerous because it doesn't necessarily feel that it's hazardous. But there are 16 lanes of traffic. There's 8 going each way. There's on and off ramps. It's the closest one to the 405, so there's on and off ramps. People are coming and going out of strip malls. People are, you know, switching lanes. So there is a lot going on at that intersection.
8 lanes of traffic each way on what? On Sepulveda, or are you talking about combined?
Combined, yeah, combined at the entire intersection. I don't know if you've ever been over there, but it's a huge, huge intersection, bigger than most that I've actually been on in LA.
The curious thing is, if you look at a map of the San Fernando Valley, it's pretty much a grid, right? So you would think, I mean, these are all 90-degree angles for the most part, that those kinds of intersections aren't going to be the particularly dangerous ones. What do you think makes this so dangerous?
I honestly just think it has something to do with the fact that it's near a busy freeway. And a lot of these collisions, just to clarify, you know, a lot of them, they don't happen all the time exactly in the intersection. The LAPD, when they do a report, they put the nearest closest intersection. So you could be like maybe a few hundred feet away from the exact intersection when that collision is happening. But I think it's just because there's so many cars coming through there.
You've actually talked to people, or at least a few people, who have businesses or live near that intersection. So what have they told you?
Yeah, most of the people that we talked to that live near that intersection said that people are really trying to beat the light. I know that one of the craziest things for me when I moved to LA was the left turn signal. There's really no dedicated left turn signal for most lanes of traffic here.
Like a protected lane to let you turn left.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So a lot of people are like misjudging it and trying to beat the light a lot of times. That was one of the biggest things that one of the guys that I spoke to said.
How many wrecks are we talking about?
Well, the LAPD recorded 47 collisions around that particular intersection of Sepulveda Boulevard and Sherman Way. This was in 1 year.
In 1 year.
Now, these are just the ones that are reported to the police. There are a lot of fender benders that don't even make it to police reports.
Is that up or down? I mean, are they decreasing or are they increasing?
Well, a lot of the collisions that are happening, they are overall going down. I just think that this particular intersection was a bit problematic.
This particular intersection, but you say that some other intersections nearby, in Van Nuys and other parts of the San Fernando Valley, are also pretty dangerous.
Yeah, well, they have Burbank Boulevard and Sepulveda Boulevard is really dangerous. And then there's also Sherman Way and Woodman Avenue, Sherman Way and Van Nuys Boulevard.
I'm feeling a trend here.
Yeah, so if you're in Van Nuys, just be very careful when you're riding around.
But I mean, they're simple intersections. So people trying to beat the light. I mean, that's pretty much everywhere USA, isn't it?
That is true. And then a lot of people are also speeding through the intersection. I know that ABC did a story and they spoke to a guy who said that he always sees cars like flying through there. He said they treat it like a raceway.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, yeah, that pretty much solves it. People are busy and they have places to go, I guess.
Yeah, people, well, obviously this is LA. And I think what happens is people exiting the 405, they've probably been stuck on that freeway and they're like, okay, I can pick up some time now.
Exactly.
By getting onto Sepulveda or some other part of the San Fernando Valley. What is LA and LAPD specifically, what are they trying to do to keep these levels down or at least keep them decreasing?
Well, I spoke to Lieutenant David Ferry, who's with the Traffic Enforcement Section of the LAPD, and I know that he's part of the high injury network thing that they have set up to kind of combat collisions that happen in LA. I know that when I spoke to him for the story, he had like over 20 officers who are dedicated just to that area in Van Nuys to kind of like make sure that people are following the rules of the road. They definitely are really, really big on enforcement because a lot of these collisions do lead to injury and death.
I know the mayor's office implemented something called Vision Zero. We've been hearing about that for a few years, right?
Yes.
In an effort to eliminate deaths from traffic collisions. You think it's been effective? I mean, are the numbers, we say they're going down, but are they really going down?
Well, that's the thing. I know that there was a die-in at City Hall recently. Bicycle advocates were protesting and saying that they don't see the results of that going down. They don't see any change. They don't think it's effective. I think that they probably need more time to kind of figure that out and see, you know, what needs to be changed. And that's why we wanted to analyze the data, you know, to kind of help out. We figure if we can see where the problem exists, then people, the powers that be, can start to determine what needs to be done to actually fix those problems. And maybe it's something like new intersections, new crossing. I know here in some parts of LA, they have pedestrian-led crosswalks now. So they'll let pedestrians go to give them a few extra seconds before the light turns green, which definitely helps with reducing collisions.
And I know that bicycle advocates say, you know, we need more dedicated lanes for bikes. We need more thoroughfares that are maybe shut down to cars so these bikes can get through and where it's not as dangerous. I know that's been, they've lamented that for a long time.
The Department of Transportation, they work really closely with city council members in the community to try to get as many protected bike lanes installed as they can. And they do help. I actually have a story coming out about bike collisions. So I'll keep
tuned.
You posted.
Yeah. Ethan Ward, who writes for Crosstown. Ethan, thanks for the information. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, after a short break, fears about the coronavirus caused stocks to plunge today, more than 1,000 points for the Dow. And they're also causing a lot of anger in Orange County. Why are people so upset in the OC? That's next on KCRW's Greater LA. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The World Health Organization announced today the coronavirus has the potential to become a pandemic. Some parts of China are already in full-on health crisis. Italy has locked down 50,000 people in 10 northern towns. Iran reports that at least 12 people have died from the virus. And here in California, there are a number of people under quarantine at Travis Air Force Base between San Francisco and Sacramento. Federal and state agencies have been working on a plan to move anyone who tests positive to a place called the Fairview Developmental Center in Costa Mesa in Orange County. But Costa Mesa is having none of it. On Friday, city officials got a federal judge to block any patients being moved pending a hearing sometime today. And here to talk more about this developing story is Gustavo Arellano with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
This is South Orange County. This is a very different part of the county. The federal government's trying to tell Costa Mesa what to do. I suspect that's not going over very well.
It's the same old song that we talk about here all the time. Costa Mesa is a coastal city, not necessarily South Orange County, not also the richest city in Orange County, kind of right in the middle. But nevertheless, it's in a place where no one wants to have not only the federal government, but also the state government telling it what to do. And with the Fairview Developmental Center, so this was a longtime facility by the state to house intellectually disabled people. There's already been a power struggle over it in the past couple of years, and now you have this.
So what did Costa Mesa officials say? What is their argument?
Oh, the argument's simple. We do not want any patients that have tested positive for coronavirus. We don't want the state or the federal government to come in like within a moment's notice and say, hey, Costa Mesa, by the way, this disease that everyone's freaking out about, well, now you get to deal with it because we're going to transport some of these patients that have tested positive into this facility that's right in the middle of your city. So can you give us a little bit of help?
So, all right, the decision was handed down last week. There was a news conference on Saturday. What was that like?
Republicans and Democrats in Orange County in the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area united to say no. So there you had the mayor of Costa Mesa, Katrina Foley, a Democrat who's running for state Senate. You had the congressperson of the area, Harley Ruda. You had Michelle Steele, the supervisor for the area. So you had all these politicians. Really, it was, I understand they're trying to tell the public, their constituents, hey, we're going to help you folks to make sure you don't get contaminated with this disease. But really, it was a political moment to show the voters, yes, we stood strong against the coronavirus invading Costa Mesa.
All right. What about the people you're talking about, politicians and this united front, obviously? What are people in the community saying about this, Gustavo?
The residents of Costa Mesa and also neighboring Newport Beach, you have flat out xenophobia. There was, I believe it was a Voice of OC, or no, it was actually the Daily Pilot, the sister paper of the Los Angeles Times, that had a picture of a resident carrying a sign saying, we don't want Costa Mesa to become another Wuhan. You really have xenophobia and coming out with this, and I get it. Look, this is disease that's spreading around the world that people are getting really scared about. Anytime there's any threat of a pandemic, of course people are going to freak out. It's starting to turn ugly.
Well, I mean, as you say, it's understandable. People see on the news, they see the conditions in China where hospitals are overwhelmed, and then they think, oh my gosh, this is going to happen in our town.
Exactly. And then, of course, the bigger issue, again, is that tug of war over the Fairview Developmental Center. So this has been part of the state since 1960. They're supposed to close it at the end of June. Last year, Governor Gavin Newsom said, hey, we might house some homeless folks there at that center. It's already set up to help out, especially people with mental health issues. The city said, no, we want to turn it into housing. It'll be affordable housing or whatnot. Doing this with the coronavirus is just inflaming the politicians in Costa Mesa even more. They're really feeling under attack again by local or rather by state and federal governments. And the interesting thing is that in this case, the Costa Mesa City Council, it's dominated by a progressive Democratic bloc. So that just goes to show in Orange County, you don't have to be a Republican to go with the gospel of NIMBYism.
And we're talking just about a handful of people, right? We're not talking about a large number of people coming into Costa Mesa.
Oh, yeah. There's just a handful of folks. These were people. Right now, the population at Travis Air Force Base is these are the people who are under quarantine. Now, if any of those folks would be infected, then the state was saying, well, we're thinking of using the Fairview Developmental Center. That's what they told the city of Costa Mesa, that we're thinking. Not it's going to be absolutely 100% certain.
So if patients do get sick at Fairview, do they get treated at Fairview or do they go to other Orange County hospitals? What happens in that case? Do we have any guidance on that?
According to the feds, all of the treatment, all of the quarantine is going to happen in Fairview, that there's not going to be, at this point at least, any patients being sent out to other hospitals in Orange County. Of course, Orange County has a really good healthcare system, but at this point, it's a federal issue, but the feds want to get the local folks involved. And again, going back to the great themes of Orange County, when you have the feds or the state telling Orange County what to do, Orange County is going to get really upset and they're going to go sue you.
Well, again, there is a hearing on this matter today in Orange County. We're going to have, obviously, updates on this story as well. We'll be talking about it for sure. Gustavo Arellano, a regular here on Greater LA, and also staff writer with the LA Times. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
And by the way, California's Department of Public Health is asking for something, well, something unusual for thousands of people who have just returned from China. Stay home. Self-quarantine. Avoid contact with other people for the rest of the month. That's going to do it for us today. Coming up next, it's The Business with Kim Masters. Tomorrow, voting has begun at centers all across LA County where you can vote and who the new voters are. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe, share your thoughts with us. Jenna Cagle, Danielle Chiriguayo, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, Amy Ta, and Christian Bordahl make up our dream team. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.